Hey, grandkids, what's going on? This is a special edition of the Stunt Granny audio earlier in the week than you're used to. Why? Because Kevin had a big weekend. What's going on, Kevin?
Yes, I did have a big weekend. One day involved wrestling. and I think that's a good thing. But, it was a full day of activity, though, surrounding the wrestling. When you've got to drive 2.5 hours there and 2.5 hours back, it pretty much kills your day.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a huge chunk of time. Let me go backwards a little bit and not be a douche and introduce ourselves properly. I'm Eric, and I'm with Kevin. Kevin went to, as we all know, Kevin is the Pro Wrestling Ohio expert of StuntGranny.com. Kevin living in Ohio and all Columbus, to be exact, makes it a very handy situation. And this past Sunday in Cleveland, Pro Wrestling Ohio held its third annual Wrestlution card. And so we're going to talk about that tonight. So you had to drive, how far is it from Columbus to Cleveland?
I just know it is 2.5 hours. I'm not even really sure what the mileage is.
And your Saturn made it, you said?
No, thank God. My buddy, Sean drove. My, Saturn needs to be worked on. It is, being really herky-jerky between the areas of 30 and 50 miles an hour.
Ooh, ouch. That's
so we actually took his Xterra up there.
Ah, gotcha. Good deal.
So,
that's a Nissan, right?
Yes, it is.
How was the ride?
Just peachy, and as boring as that, I said that I wish the drive on I-71 was this exciting, and I did notice that it is mostly a tree-lined drive the whole way up there. I was like, wow, I guess there are trees. So I guess it was at least as exciting as that picture, although I really fucking do not like that drive.
Well, no offense to Ohio, but the only things I've ever heard about Ohio are, one, the river in Cleveland caught fire. Two, Jesse Ventura at the end of one of the Survivor Series says, "I'm happy because I'm leaving Cleveland." David Tell and the joke that I've already told 1,000 times about, you know what's fun to do in Dayton, Ohio? Pack up and get the fuck out of there. And the fact that Columbus is on the Food Network all the time, which is awesome. That's actually the positive thing. So I'm glad to hear that there are trees along the pavement.
Yeah. But it's otherwise, because that was the drive back up to Kent. And so I had made a number of times previous to just going up for various and sundry events, such as watching the fine Cleveland Clowns play a football game.
Nice. Well, let's talk about Wrestlution then. That's another fine event put on by Pro Wrestling Ohio. How would you rate it, first of all? Let's just start with a bang. On a scale of 1 to 10, or if you want to do a thumbs up, thumbs down sort of thing, how would you rate the show?
In some ways, I think the main event was better this year than last year.
Mm-hmm.
It had the same problem that last year's main event had. The guys that pull off, and I don't know something that I meant to ask some of the guys that I met afterwards if the ring was smaller than normal or not, because it seemed like the guys were running into each other awfully quickly, which it seemed like everybody's timing was a little bit off.
Okay.
And especially for some of the guys that were more high flyers, it seemed to cause more problems than the, I don't know if they have any real mat-based wrestlers, honestly. Like, I don't know if Michael Cole would be able to pull out the ground and pound, except for maybe Benjamin Boone out of the people on the roster. So it did make for some mistimed spots, but it was nice because the crowd was larger this year. Although it was really bizarre because they had an intermission.
Mm-hmm.
And at the intermission, they did not – like, a lot of the crowd left. Like, I thought they were just going to get drinks or whatever. But if I ever get a USB cable or a car an SD card that works properly, I want to load the pictures onto the site, or at least onto the forum, so that I can show those off. I mean, I didn't take them the last 2 years just for shits and giggles.
Yeah. Not for your own health.
Yeah. I did take them to the site, so it'd be nice to eventually offload these puppies.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to do it with a promptness this time around. It does kind of help that I have money to buy such devices to aid in stunt granny operations.
Yes. So, but talk about the, I don't want to get you, off track, but talk about the venue, and then since you said the attendance was up from last year, but talk about the attendance compared to last year. And then what the hell was going on that everybody left at intermission? But start with the fact that it was an outdoor show, which is kind of cool.
Well, it was an outdoor show. Just like last year, and I think they've officially changed the name back, it's called Nautica Pavilion. It's an outdoor venue that I went to a lot of concerts there. I saw Pantera, Slayer, and a bunch of other guys up there. So, yeah, they just kind of have a tension-pulled canvas dome over it that is obviously open.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of has an oculus in it, which is just a big round open hole in the middle.
Right.
For
those of you who don't know your domes, and what is it? Was it Greek architecture?
Well, that was a Roman thing, at least.
A Roman thing, okay, yeah.
It was in the Pantheon.
There you go. I'm testing myself against your knowledge, and I'm failing miserably.
Oh, that's okay. At least it seems like you've read the site and read my reviews, which have mentioned these things before.
You're bringing up stuff from my art history class that I took in 1999 that's like bringing back fond memories of watching slides for an hour.
outstanding. So, yeah, it's an outdoor venue. It's right on, it's on kind of a tributary that feeds into Lake Erie there.
Cool.
And it's on and that was another amusing part of the whole situation. Well, it was only amusing afterwards. The main, you come down, at least the way I always came for other concerts too, because there's an East Bank and a West Bank.
Okay.
And on the East Bank is where I usually went to all the concerts, the non-outdoor variety.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ever did go over to Nautica, and even what I did last year is you come down in the East Bank and then there's a bridge right there.
Mm-hmm.
To go over into the West Bank. Well, they had that bridge closed.
Okay.
And the detour route wasn't marked very well. And on top of that, Sean's GPS kept on taking us in circles because it didn't realize why the fuck we didn't just go over the bridge.
Great. Recalculating.
Yeah. So that did us no favors. And I had never used an alternate route to get to the West Bank. And I'm like, I have no fucking clue what to do right now. Like, I was just – so luckily, my PWO mole knew a route to get in there. So luckily, we did get, another route in there, and we got there at just about 3:00 on the button.
Okay.
So
and the show started at 3:00, is that right?
Yeah, the show started at 3:00. The gates opened at 2:00, and the show started at 3:00.
Okay.
So that was the only thing, and that's probably one of the reasons, if they did not have a daytime one, I'm not sure that I would go up for a night pay-per-view type deal, if it was like the WWE, I would never drive up to Cleveland for a wrestling pay-per-view because that would pretty much mandate me taking Monday off from work.
Yeah, you would end up at home if it were a WWE pay-per-view, you wouldn't get out of the parking lot for an hour after the show, which would be probably midnight by the time you're actually out of the lot, putting you home by about 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it would not be cool.
No, the Sunday afternoon gimmick is a really good idea then. That's very smart of PWO.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've thought about the last couple of years or if it's just been a happy coincidence that they've done it when the Indians are not playing.
Oh, yeah, that's a smart idea. That's really smart, actually. It's the only, let's see, yeah, it's the only pro sport going on right now, so might as well plan around
right.
it.
Yep, I mean, I know that training camp just started off football, but yeah, baseball's the only sport in full swing. And Nautica is not all that far from it's called Progressive Field now.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there would have been a problem had they been there, especially traffic-wise, and I would think that that would hurt their attendance some.
Sure.
So,
What was the attendance then for this year, approximately?
Maybe 2,000 people or so.
Holy cow. That's a hell of an indie show.
Yeah, I'd say between 1,500 and 2,000.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Because I know that they were over 1,000 last year, and they had the same setup as last year where on the main normally where you kind of have the mosh pit and everything, the main part of the crowd is where they have the ring. And up on stage, they have the band that plays during intermission, which they did not follow my lead and pick up Bold for Swank like a bunch of bitches.
Damn it. Next year, Revolution 4, Hold for Swank Revenge.
So, the band is kind of crowded off to one side of the stage where they have the backstage area, which is the part close. Well, it's kind of hemmed in by the turn of the river.
Uh-huh.
The other side kind of is a bit longer and kind of goes straight out, and there's more shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know what to tell you which direction it is. But, they had the backstage area and the band's there. And then they have a bunch of seating up on the stage also.
Okay, that's cool.
I've sat up on the stage the both years.
Okay.
Because you get a little bit better of a view and you're closer and it's part of the VIP seating.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're allowed to sit anywhere as a VIP, but that's as close as you're going to get to the ring without having, a front row seat, which actually, weirdly, is not included in the VIP package. You just get to sit on the stage or anywhere kind of where you want to.
Okay.
Aside from, like, the front row.
Sure. Interesting.
Yeah. And I was explaining that because across from me, when you're up on the stage, you see the main part of the seating really right in front of you. It's the largest set of bleachers. There are some off to the right-hand side and off to the left-hand side, but the viewing probably isn't as good, and the seats aren't as the bleachers aren't as tall either.
Okay.
But last year, there were some decent open pockets across the way from me. Well, they probably had lined off with Do Not Enter tape, probably the top 10 rows or so, 10 to 15 rows. Well, they had people filled almost the whole way up to that row. And last year, I don't remember them doing anything like that, and it definitely was not, like, solid people the whole way up there. And that was the other thing that might have been a little bit deceptive. More people might have stayed than I'm thinking because people did end up taking down the tape and sitting up higher. So I don't know if everybody didn't like being kind of crowded in and they decided to take matters into their own hands. Although, I mean, a decent chunk of the people had to have left.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing that because I'm like, man, a lot of people left, and I looked at my pictures, and I'm like, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So if I upload the pictures here at some juncture, you can tell. And I don't know what it was, honestly, because the TV title was the only one, the only title that had been defended by Intermission.
So it, even if nothing else told the crowd, like a ring announcer, hey, we're coming back, they should at least expect another like main event level match.
Right. Yeah, because I think I am kind of skimming through the review here right now that I wrote. Yeah, they had the Jason Bayne versus Raven match was the last match before the intermission. There were five matches after that.
Which is funny. That's the five. That's half, more than half the card.
Yeah, it's more than half the card. And then it was the tag belts and the main event.
Sure.
Still left, you know, for the heavyweight title. So it's kind of like, wow, why is everyone leaving right now?
Yeah. Was the Hacksaw okay? I don't want to jump ahead too much, but was the Hacksaw Duggan match before or after intermission?
After. It was sandwiched in between the two title matches, actually, in the second half.
Okay,
so,
which
and,
is bizarre, because
you know,
I went to the Pro Wrestling Ohio website here as we're talking, and Hacksaw Duggan is, like, the biggest thing on the poster. So you'd think that people would hang out and wait for the biggest guy on the poster to wrestle.
Yeah, I mean, he's the, you know, oldest name. He's still, well, I guess I can hold off until that. But, yeah, you would think that everybody would want to see him. But
right.
I was kind of surprised that a lot of people bailed out. And, I mean, it wasn't like there was – it did not seem like anything was going on in Cleveland that day, like, at all. It was a ghost – it was a ghost town aside from Nautica.
Okay.
Yeah, 'cause we did do a little bit of driving around in town. Yeah, just nothing. So it's like, what the hell are you going to do right now?
Right. No.
Didn't quite get that.
That's interesting. Funny. Since I brought up Hacksaw Duggan, too, let's talk about that. The big names this year that were brought in were Raven and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Last year, Greg the Hammer Valentine and Jim the Anvil Neidhart were brought in. Compare this year's big names with last year's big names.
Valentine was hurt last year,
okay,
so
yep.
He didn't even end up wrestling, and he was involved with the story of, they were crowning new, PETA, I think they brought in the tag team championships last season.
Okay.
I have to go, I can't remember if they had, if they brought the belt in before Resolution, or if they brought them in at the event itself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that they brought it in beforehand.
Okay.
And they were defending them against Team Clash, who were on opposing sides here this year.
This year, right, yeah. Ernie Balls. I use Ernie Balls on my guitar, but it's strings and not, yeah, the wrestler.
Right, yeah, that's probably a good idea. And Brian Bender. So, yeah, and I'm trying to think if anybody else had come in aside from those two. But I don't think there was. Oh, well, Portia Perez was a bit of a bring-in last year.
Yeah.
Because she was not a regular on their TV show. And, Haley Hatred had been wanting to challenge somebody, and she got brought in, Perez got brought in as kind of the assassin to take out Haley Hatred, who had had some issues with a couple of the men on the roster.
So that was kind of the same angle that they used with Raven this year, in a way.
In a way. But McGuire has been after getting rid of Jason Bayne all 3 years that Pro Wrestling Ohio has been on TV.
Okay.
So that's kind of been a long-running feud.
And now that he's managed to collect $7 million to put toward a bounty, then...
Well, $100,000.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Hey, with a crowd of 2,000 people, maybe I shouldn't be surprised that he's putting up $100,000. Oops, kayfabe.
You know, I don't know if there's much of a comparison. I mean, Raven is markedly younger than the other guys.
Yeah, I would say so.
And I would have to say, as an overall whole, Hacksaw got more of a reaction than the Anvil did.
Okay.
Or Greg Valentine. And poor Valentine just looked like so grumpy puss when he was there signing up, because he was still there at the event. I forget what he had done, broken his leg or something, because he was in a soft cast.
Okay.
But so he was still there and walking around and everything. But yeah, he just looked like he didn't want to be there.
Well, didn't he wrestle the night before too?
Yeah, because I think I remember talking to you about this, that he was in Iowa or something the night before.
I want to say Indiana.
Indiana. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of us were trying to figure out how the fuck he was going to get there, because we even thought that events were the same day or something at first.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but apparently not. And given that it takes Jim Neidhart 90 minutes to warm up, he would have had to spend the entire bus ride wrestling somebody just to be ready for the event.
Yes.
Whereas Hacksaw, all he's got to do is just roll into town with a flag and a 2x4, and he's got people on their feet screaming USA for him.
Yeah, and that's another thing, and I guess that is exactly it, is that that guy can get a crowd going no matter what. Like, I know that it's sucker, but, you know, there are just other people that are popular that just can't get people to do anything, really.
Yeah, there's just something lovable about Hacksaw Jim Duggan, no matter what year it is, no matter what country we hate, no matter what country you love, for that matter. Hell, there are people at Sky Dome in Toronto at WrestleMania 6 chanting USA.
Yeah, so, you know, I think maybe quality-wise it was a little bit better, and it was nice to have them in different matches this year, too, rather than them being jammed, quote-unquote, into one match last year.
Right. Yeah,
but I'm even trying to look it up here to to see if I am wrong in that department.
Well, as far as the two... Valentine and Neidhart being together in the match?
No. Not them being together, but them being the sole...
Oh, I'm looking up. I see Al Snow's name, actually. He wrestled...
He wrestled Nate Matson.
Nate Madison. Yep, Matson, yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. I also see Bob Golish's name on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I finally did get to it. I forgot about, I guess if you're going to make a comparison, well, Al Snow was kind of brought in the same way that Hacksaw was, really, is that it was almost more of a comedy match.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, Matson is pro-Michigan, and, you know, and Al Snow, since he's from Lima, is pro-Ohio.
Right.
Even though there's probably about the same amount of distance between Lima and Detroit as there is between Lima and Cleveland.
Okay.
But, yeah, they were both kind of filler matches that you knew that the Pro Wrestling Ohio person was not going to pull out the victory.
Right. Gotcha. Let's see. I'm looking over. Spoilers or inside baseball. I don't know what you want to call this, but Kevin actually wrote up a review before we started recording this show, so I get a first peek at it, suckers. And I'm gonna go ahead and bounce back and forth between your review and your preview. And so yeah, I don't know if you're ready to go over the card. I'm ready as well.
Yeah, I guess the other couple of little things that I already mentioned that I thought the ring looked kind of small.
Yeah.
The sound was just, the microphone sound was pretty terrible. It seemed like when the wrestlers talked, it was okay, but when they seemed to be announcing stuff, like the Pedro DeLuca, the regular ring announcer, he mm-hmm. sounded pretty garbled, and then they had a couple of people from management talk about, you know, because they did it, what, it was like the Police Action League or something like that helped sponsor it.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, they brought some people up to, you know, talk about a couple of their sponsors, which is, you know, understandable.
Sure. Those folks need to be aware of their voice and how it projects into a microphone. I'm sure their ring announcer is good, but even if he was garbled, you know, you can't just bring sponsors into the ring, have them talk into a microphone. They probably never do public speaking and expect
yeah.
the crowd to be able to hear them well.
Yeah, because that was another thing about Hacksaw. The guy was clearer and louder than pretty much anybody that grabbed the microphone.
I have the feeling he doesn't need a microphone.
No, he is a loud individual.
That's so awesome.
So, yeah, there was that. And then the one thing that I wondered going into it, I'm like, Aaron McGuire, who normally has been the Keller commentator the whole season, they
yep.
had brought in a couple of spells. They had brought in some people from, it was either Absolutely Intense Wrestling or, no, it was the CWE, and I can't think of what the initials stand for. But anywho, they had brought in a Keller commentator for a couple of those matches. So I was like, McGuire has a match unofficially,
right.
The Jason Bayne versus Raven. I wonder if he's going to be on commentary all day. And he, in fact, was not at all.
Oh, okay.
They just had Jamie Scott, who was the heel Keller guy for the
mm-hmm.
for parts of the first season. I think he was suspended during part of it, came back for Resolution 1. And then he started, I think, at the beginning of last season and made it maybe about halfway through. And then they brought in Michael Cash, who was the backstage guy. To fill in as the Keller commentator.
Mm-hmm.
And then McGuire picked it up pretty much at the beginning of this year. So, yeah, they brought back the old heel commentators, so it'll be interesting while watching the matches
yeah.
to see what happens because, you know, I thought McGuire and Joe Dombrowski, the play-by-play guy that's been there the whole time, you know, it started to finally get together maybe about halfway through the season or so. So it'd be
yeah.
interesting to see if him and Scott have the same rapport as they used to, or if things
mm-hmm.
sound a little bit clunky or not.
Sure. And actually, since you mentioned being able to watch the matches, just for conversation's sake, PWO, do they put out DVDs? Have they put out DVDs of the past Resolution cards, and are they going to put one out of this one?
Yeah, they have the past cards, and I am quite sure. I think he even got an email on Google that you could pre-order it already.
Okay, cool. Good to
so,
know.
So, yeah, I think it's, I usually have the link. I think it's pwowrestling.com,
yes,
I believe, is the web address. And they said that they're having problems with the site, but those have since been cleared up. I got on there perfectly fine today.
Yep, and I'm on there right now. So, yep, I can
yeah,
vouch for it.
Yeah, and it's pretty cheap. I think it was like $10 for the DVD or something last year. Like, you are definitely not going out of your way to,
cool.
you know, spend a whole lot of money on these things.
Cool. All right. Well, let's go through the card here. And then, like I said, I'm going to start from the beginning, and I'm going to bounce back and forth between your review and your preview. The Ninja Elite Squad, and also, while we're going through these, I'm going to look. There are pictures up of these folks on their website. And some of the pictures are awesome. And some of them are leaving my head scratching. I like the look of the Ninja Elite Squad. They kind of look like a mix between the Human Tornado and another blaxploitation film. And, yeah, I really don't know what this guy's about, the guy with Raven's dreadlocks. But they look kind of interesting in their way. Versus the Gambinos. Let me get this right. Marshall and Mickey Gambino and Nikki Valentino. Hey! Let's see. According to your preview, let's see here. Well, oh, this is the mystery partner. Okay, I see. Mystery partner. So was it like an in-house sort of mystery partner situation? Nikki Valentino is a regular roster member?
Yeah, it was. He is part of Sex Appeal.
Okay.
So he helped them out. Helped out the Gambinos because of an injury to Shima Zion, who had spray paint sprayed in his eyes.
Okay.
Which also kept Zion had done it to Michael Fassade earlier in the year, so Fassade said, "Hey, I'm coming an eye for an eye." So he went ahead and did it. So that put Zion out. But even though he had hired the Gambinos to help him fight Fassade and Aeroform, who's Lewis Linden and Flip Kendrick, who are supposed to be brothers. They do look alike, but they've got to be half brothers or something like that, because one is a good chunk taller and he is more lightly skinned of the two African American gentlemen.
Yeah.
So I am unsure of any previous histories, but there is definitely, there's probably a good like 4 or 5 inch height difference and a little bit different in the looks department too, but I could see some similarities. You couldn't tell on TV that they had similarities that much, or maybe it's just because, you know, you don't get those like WWE close-up shots all that often.
Yeah.
And you definitely did. I did, because I saw them afterwards, and just even seeing them in the ring, you could tell that they were related in some manner, I would say.
Okay. Cool. Interesting. You also said in your preview, you said this match has curtain jerker written all over it, and I guess as an opener, which is awesome, by the way. I love a good six-man tag, and I love a six-man tag opening a show. How was it for a show opener?
It was good, but this was also part of the whole small ring scenario.
Mm-hmm.
They, Fassade and Aeroform have a fairly diverse and usually well-executed high-flying set of maneuvers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it was because they were outside, if the ropes were something odd, but or like I said, like I felt like the ring was a little bit smaller or something. They had some hard time with some things, like they just they weren't judging the distances properly, which is why I thought that it was the ring was small. It just seemed consistently that they were pulling off the maneuvers fairly well, but it just seemed like, you know, they were overshooting someone or undershooting someone, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think the high-flying antics factored into it, and Valentino's kind of the goofball of Sex Appeal.
Uh-huh.
And he also acted the part of the goof in this one, and he really even exaggerated it probably more than normal. So there was that, and then he ended up, he kept on tagging himself in during the match, and you could see the Gambinos getting pissed off about it. Like, they were beating down somebody, and he tagged himself in, not do much damage, get himself in trouble, and then tag one of them back in.
Sure.
So eventually they kind of got fed up with him and just pitched him back into the ring, and all three of the Ninja Elite Squad hit their finishers, and somebody pinned him. I really don't remember which of the three honestly pinned him. I believe it was one of Aeroform. You know what? It was Flip Kendrick, because he kind of does something similar. He does like a 450, not a 450. He does more of a 360 with a twist in it.
Okay, something like Too Cold Scorpio might do.
Yeah. That's actually a good comparison. It's something similar. It's something similar to that. So since he has the only high flying finisher, which is kind of odd, really, he was the one that ended up pinning Valentino.
Okay.
Plus, it does kind of protect the Gambinos, who are much larger.
Right. Yeah. Another thing of possibly worth noting, I'm not sure, maybe you can tell me if I'm reading too much into this, Ninja Elite Squad, the acronym is NES. That's kind of awesome. Oh.
You know what, I didn't even realize that, but no, I think that's more because they do kind of have, if you see, I believe it's Lewis Linden has the kind of like the old school afro with a sunrise bandana on it.
Yeah.
So they all kind of pull some karate moves into their arsenals also.
Sure.
And they also train at a I think they have a name for it. It's escaping me right now. But they train up at a dojo in Michigan where they're from.
Okay.
So it's all kind of part of the gimmick. And Michael Fassad, he always wears a gi, which is, you know, the top half to a karate outfit.
Right.
So, yeah, that kind of stuff. Maybe they did give it that name to be NES, but they definitely have other reasons to use that name.
Sure. They have the martial arts background, hence the ninja part of their name. I would just like
right.
to think that it's NES because it's funny, and I would also like to think that someday if they doubled their force that they could call themselves Super NES. But that's just me. Just an idea. You didn't book my band to play the show anyway. I don't expect you to take my good ideas either. So, okay. Second match on the show. Portia Perez is back this year, taking on Ben, and you'll have to help me with the pronunciation of the last name. Fruth?
Yeah, Fruth.
Okay. I'm looking at this character on the PWO website, and he looks to weigh about 60 pounds soaking wet.
That is probably somewhat accurate. Maybe 120 soaking wet.
What is the story on this high school sophomore wrestling Portia Perez, and how is the match?
His story is that he was a lackey for Mike Tolar last year, who decided to bug out about a quarter of the way through this season, and he got pawned off on the Sons of Michigan, who is Benjamin Boone and Nate Madsen. So he's now their lackey. And they kept on setting him up in matches in which he would get squashed. You know, it was always against someone much larger and much better in the ring. Jason Bain comes to mind. Crimson, who was on the card later, came to mind. So he kept on getting destroyed. They're like, okay, you can do one thing right. You can beat a woman. So that's why they gave him her as an opponent.
Okay.
And she was still playing up her goofy hurricane-like gimmick.
Uh-huh, okay.
So she came to the ring dressed as Dr. Monstrous. And I think it was because she was wearing spandex pants down to the knees that she was not showing off the fine ass as much this time around.
That is a shame, because she is a cutie pie, and she has one of those.
Yes, she is. But the match was really all about Benjamin Boone accompanied Fruth to the ring. And really, also, to give you an idea, Fruth's main maneuver that Joe Dombrowski goes crazy about is the Fruth roll-up, which is, you know... Just your basic schoolboy roll up. So yeah, when that is your signature move, they and you realize that there is not much to your being as a wrestler. Let's say.
Yeah. Well, just since you brought that up, my old backyard wrestling federation. We had one of our buddies put on a mask that I bought at Hot Topic. It was like a Japanese wrestling type of mask. We called him the Mystery Samurai, and he just wrestled in, like, a sleeveless T-shirt and a pair of jeans and some shoes. But he was a, we just made him our jobber, and we said that his finishing move was the inverted pin, because he got beaten every single time. So we made sure everyone was in on the joke. Yeah, ridiculous.
As for the match itself, they put it out of its misery pretty quickly. Perez, well, Fruz acts like he doesn't want to hit Perez. She whacks him with a pretty solid forearm shiver.
Mm-hmm.
He staggers, gets yelled at, pretends to hit her once, gets yelled at, pretends to hit her a second time, gets yelled at, pretends like he's going to kick her in the crotch, gets yelled at yet again.
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason or not, I'm not completely sure why, he goes up the top rope to give her a flying crossbody.
Uh-huh.
She unwittingly moves out of the way and realizes he's down.
Uh-huh.
And then gets the pinfall.
Okay.
For the 1-2-3. And then Fruth gets up and gets berated by Benjamin Boone and tells him, mm-hmm. you know, you can't do anything right, and just yells at him as they go to the back.
Okay.
So, yeah, that match probably took about as long as I just did to describe it to you.
Nice. Very nice.
Yep. So,
all
yeah,
right.
It was more about their interactions than it was about the match itself, which is too bad, because I thought Perez and Haley Hatred put on a pretty good match last year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's it, really.
Okay. So it wasn't the best use of Portia Perez, but it was an excuse to get a cute girl on the show?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Speaking of Benjamin Boone, he was in the next match, taking on Omega Aaron Draven. Did I get that
right?
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Well, there was a little bit of a break in there. Matt Cross came out. And,
M-Dog 20, yes.
Yeah, he cut a fairly short promo and just said that he was going to beat Gargano. Gargano came out and chased him away with a chair and then said, I can't wait until, you know, the main event. Let's do this thing now.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, the cowardly heel says, buzz off.
Right.
And he heads to the back, and that segment's done with. I'm sure that will factor into the TV viewing of the event.
Right. How does that factor in with this? Did they make it perfectly clear the match was still going to happen later, or did the crowd think, oh, they're not going to wrestle? All right, so long.
No, I think Gargano is like, okay, you know, you'll get your beating tonight or later tonight or something like that as he's walking away. They did,
okay.
You know, they did make it clear that something was going to happen later in the evening.
Okay, good. I should hope so. Okay, so Benjamin Boone then takes on Aaron Draven for the TV title. And let's see, and our boy Benjamin, what was his name again? Fruth? I already forgot his first name.
Yeah,
Ben Fruth
Ben
is back.
Fruth.
Ben
yeah,
Fruth is
double,
back.
Double Ben combination here.
Yes, okay, I'm with you.
Yeah, so the first thing that I did notice that I had mentioned is that Benjamin Boone, who has been picked by a Michigan native Nate Mattson to be his crony, has switched over from his Ohio alliance to a Michigan one. So he actually had Michigan Keller tights on, which is the maize and blue.
Yeah.
Which and he's called the Big Bear, so he always has, like, it usually says Boone on the back of it, and the two O's in his name are bear print.
Okay.
And yeah, there's usually, you know, some type of claw mark on them and a bear roaring on the front.
Right.
And I don't think these were any different. I mean, it was a different design for sure than the previous ones, but
yeah.
Similar also.
Okay.
So that was kind of interesting. It was good that it goes along with the gimmick.
Yeah.
And I think Draven had new tights on because he likes the orange, but it wasn't really the noticeable difference that the Boons were.
Gotcha. And so, what was the gimmick behind this match? It was TV title, and then it says on the website, TV title versus unbeaten streak. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, ever since Nate Mattson took Boone under his wing, Boone had been undefeated. There were a couple of matches in which the finish may have been in dispute.
Okay.
But he has been undefeated for the past 2 years. So that was the streak, was that he had been undefeated, because he hadn't really taken on Jason Bayne. Well, he'd taken on Jason Bayne, but a couple of those matches had ended in DQs, I do believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, he hadn't lost in the 2 years, and Draven had had a problem with them. He won the TV title last year at Resolution, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had feuded with Mattson, lost the title to him, took a while, won it back this season, and now because of a loophole in the contract, it said that Mattson put in a loophole that said there will never be a match between Nate Mattson and Aaron Draven for the TV title again.
Nice.
Well, he screwed himself because Draven won it. He couldn't get the rematch.
Right.
So his lawyers poorly worded the contract, let's say. Yeah. So Mattson sends out, you know, he's not really his lackey because he is treated as an equal for the most part. Mattson is clearly the leader of the group, but you know, he doesn't really talk down to him or anything like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, Boone has a two-year streak. It was kind of a typical Boone, I think they called him a 265 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd believe it. He's probably every bit of 6'4", 265.
Okay.
And Draven is probably all of maybe 5'10". And He's pretty solid. He's put together. He definitely hits the gym.
Okay.
But he is kind of more of a one of his finishers is the 619. So he is another guy that tends to use the high ropes and the high risk maneuvers more. So is a short fast guy against the big lumbering power guy. So it's a bit of a David and Goliath matchup. Although, you know, not quite to the scale of Kane and Rey Mysterio or anything like that.
Right.
So, yeah, and it the match played out along those lines. There was, and I thought it was cool at first, where Draven shot himself. He was going to do kind of a cross body or something like that. And he actually flipped himself in. Well, it obviously aided with Boone into a suplex. Like, he kind of caught him coming off the rope and turned him up. Well, when they went ahead and did a, he did another one where he kind of slingshotted himself, and then it was into a spear. It kind of was like, oh, like you're kind of going, you know, same thing, you know, a little bit different, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, it kind of seemed a little repetitive, I guess, at that point.
Okay.
But it still wasn't, you know, it was well executed. So, I mean, you can't, both of them were well executed, so you can't really bag on it too much. And Draven seemed to be probably maybe the only one with the high-flying maneuvers that didn't seem to, you know, be off too much.
Sure. Was it his ring?
Yeah. And then, well, they had a couple of decent near falls in the match, and then Ben Fruth was out there the whole time. He Boone wanted him to hit him with on the head with the Draven on the head with the title. Well, Fruth refuses. I think he slapped him, but, you know, that's the problem with taking notes is I don't really know where all my keys are on my phone, so I can't like watch and take notes at the same time. So
right.
I don't know if he slapped him or exactly what he did, but he storms off. Boone actually beat down Draven for a bit longer, sets him up on the top rope, And then he's going for a superplex or something, and Draven knocks him off the ropes fairly easily, hits the 450,
mm-hmm.
and then gets the pin for the win.
Okay. So the unbeaten streak is over?
The unbeaten streak is over. It seemed, you know, just because Boone had so much of the offense before that, it seemed like Draven kind of needed a little more offense than just the 450.
Mm-hmm.
To put Boone down, in my humble opinion.
I don't know. Maybe he gets the finisher over, but also maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, he executes it fairly well. I mean, I wouldn't say he's any worse off than Justin Gabriel, really.
Okay, that's good.
He certainly doesn't have the same look that Gabriel does, but, you know,
right.
that's for another day and time.
Sure.